some form or another, in some way or another, through their endeavor, through their austerities, by their influence. In some way they try to gain some power. This is generally their purpose. And then when they gain something, then they think themselves very special, very great. We see that this has happened here with Srinivartha, that he now feels himself very special, that now he can compete with the Lord. He has mystic city, he can become very great. And because for the living entity that's something special, then he feels unique. So this is the difference, is that God, he is unique, and whatever he desires happens. So for him, it's not the showing of power that's interesting to him. Krishna shows so much power. But for him, that's no interest, because it doesn't mean anything to him. What's interesting to him is the relationships that are able to be tasted by the show of that power. That's what's interesting to him. And it's not just an on reverence that he's God. It's a matter of some interaction. So therefore, it's done with others who are powerful. So here he is tasting this demon. Is thinking himself such a great mystic yogi. He is so powerful. He is flying in the sky, taking a huge form. He is heavier than the heaviest. And now Krishna, he also then does the same thing, but a touch more. You know, it's not so much more, but it's enough more that the demon can understand that this child is more heavy than him, is more powerful than him. So just to taste that interaction. He could just take big form and be very heavy and completely bewildered to him. But no, it's enough to get the taste. He can taste how he has become bigger, how he is more powerful. So that, then, is Krishna's interest. Or he shows the universal form for Arjuna, for the taste. The Arjuna wants to know all these things, see all these things, and it's kind of like, oh, you want to know all this. Right? He has association with the two-armed form of Krishna. And he is thinking, oh, I'd like to see all these things where you're greater than the greatest, you're the ocean, you're the sky, you're the water, you're the, you know, everything. So Krishna, oh, you want to see, okay, let's see what happens. But he shows him this form, and then he becomes, Arjuna becomes very bewildered. But it's not that Krishna is enjoying now, oh, see, I am so great, and now here is somebody feeling bewildered, here is somebody feeling great reverence. No, he's enjoying seeing his friend completely get bewildered. That is what is now fun for him. Watching Krishna become, Arjuna become bewildered. So that then creates a taste. So whatever he does, he only does it to create the taste, not more, not less. So he knows perfectly what is required to create what interaction with others. And this is his purpose, this is Krishna's idea. So then here also with these demons, the demon is coming. So therefore he wants Mother Yashoda to put him down to go somewhere else. She's going to get disturbed if she's separated from Krishna. Now, if she doesn't know what happened to Krishna, then that's bad. But if she can see a demon carrying off Krishna, that will be worse. Because she's afraid, she can't see, but it could be over here or over there. But she can't find out, she can't figure out. So due to attachment, then she becomes bewildered. She falls on the ground, she's crying. But if she actually saw the demon carrying Krishna away, then she will immediately think this demon is going to do something, Krishna is finished, so something more drastic may happen. So in this way, then this was the more pleasant of the two difficulties. So then Krishna arranged like that. It is not more. So everything is perfect, just to taste what will happen. Mother Yashoda and the other gopis now think apart that, let's see, what does this demon do when he becomes more powerful? What will be that whole transformation of the mentality of this demon from being very proud and that to in a moment then losing that confidence and then going the opposite way, then he becomes very fearful. Most of these kind of things then are there. So the living entity, when they take these things up, we don't find this rasa. This is the problem with the material world. Somebody wants to enjoy it, but then the mood is not necessarily that of the interaction, but it's enjoy. Right? You bring somebody, you give so many things, oh, I enjoy, there's a nice atmosphere of enjoyment. But then the idea is that, see what I'm providing, I'm able to provide so you can enjoy so nicely. Or in that environment where everybody else says, I can feel comfortable to enjoy, I want to enjoy so I expand it, others are enjoying, it creates a nice atmosphere, I can enjoy how much I like. Others then will be impressed, oh, see what enjoyment he is giving, or he's prepared preparations that I have not done, or his arrangements are better, or his utensils are better, or something's better, and there's some prestige there. So we see is that there's not really interaction between the living entities. It becomes, transformed through the medium of the so-called items of pleasure. So that direct interaction is lost. So we see Krishna is not doing it. He creates an environment of enjoyment to create interaction. So the enjoyment is not what is being looked for. The senses meeting the sense objects is not what is being looked for. But it is a medium to taste the interaction. It creates an environment in which then the devotee and the Lord can interact. So we see it's very different. That's the spiritual, because you're trying to please the other person. And you're using the, some kind of enjoyment as the medium here. In the material world, we want to please ourselves, directly, and then also that others will appreciate that we please them. So then we will also benefit from that side, right? We should get, why we should only get profit one side, get profit both sides. Right? I enjoy myself, then I make arrangements for others to enjoy, because they're happy, now they're going to praise me for what nice arrangements I made. Like that. So then I get from both sides. Right? So, and the Krishna is simply trying to please the devotee. The devotee is trying to please Krishna. And so the direct interaction between the two of them is actually the main taste. The main platform of interaction, the main platform of gossip. The impersonalist also, if he has knowledge, he wants to be the controller. But that we see is that he becomes God, and then each one is God. So one sannyasi is meeting the other sannyasi, and they're greeting each other, Narayan, Narayan. You are Narayan, I'm Narayan, we're all Narayan. And we know this, the others don't know this, we enjoy this. I am God, I say you're God, okay, then I feel good. You've accepted I'm God, I'm God-minded, so I accept you as God also. And in this way we encourage each other. But same thing, I'm creating some nice sensual facility, the other person is, oh, such a nice arrangement, you have done so nice. You really know how to enjoy. So in the same way together, oh, you're God, you really know how to be God. And they say, yes, and you're also a good God, you're not a bad God yourself. So also we see is the taste. It's not real rasa, it's still self-centered. Even though it's so seemingly elevated and detached from the material. The taste is still very mundane, very shallow. And then the yogis, that same difficulty. They perform their mystic siddhis. They manipulate the body. And in this way, but a very sattvic way, they're manipulating the body. So they're dealing with the body, very sattvic, very nice, good food, good exercise, good regulation, you know, everything very nice, good light, good air, you know, a peaceful place, everything nice. And in that environment, then they create a very, you know, expertise in their bodily adjustments, moving the energies in the body, focusing the mind, playing with the mind, you know, intellectualizing on these things. So again, they're very much absorbed in their own grossness of the body. So then, from that, then they have worked so hard, it's very hard, mystic siddhis. So then they want some benefits, so then, and it's very hard to do the yoga, so then they want mystic siddhis. So these mystic siddhis then become very important for them. So, and then once they have them, they have to show them to others. From that, then they show themselves great, so then they're trying to taste both of these aspects, that they are very great and special. And at the same time, that they can enjoy. So what we see is that the living entities' endeavors in this world aren't really bring out any good taste, any good rasa. So this is the misfortune of material existence. So then Krishna, he comes to awaken the living entity to actual rasa. What is actual interaction? What is the actual relationship between one living entity and another? So then, he comes to perform his pastimes. The living entities then can hear about these. They get attracted to and get a taste for transcendental rasa. So that is the idea then. Krishna performing all these nice pastimes is that the devotees he interacts with and he directly tastes this taste. And for those who are aspiring devotees or not yet devotees, then he performs activities that may inspire them to come to this platform of pure rasa. And then for those who are inimical, it's that, okay, you're God, okay, let us compare our godness. Like that. You're a great God. Okay, let's see. You know? You have a breath. Oh, you have chakra. Okay, I also have chakra. You know, you're Vasudeva, I'm Vasudeva. Okay, now let's see what happens. You know, if I throw my chakra, what happens to your head? Okay? So, like this, that he has this face. There's somebody trying to compete with Krishna. So the devotees must be aware of this and be careful. Mystic siddhis are there. All kinds of amazing esoteric powers and abilities are there. But they may be special, you know, for the common person, because the common person is not having. But for Krishna, they're nothing special. Krishna, his existence is mystic. Krishna's existence is special. So then, there's nothing compared to him. So devotees also have to be very careful to not become bewildered by those who have some ability, something special to them. They have special, you know, in whatever the area may be, like that. Is that somebody who has something more than us, then if it's not in connection with Krishna, it's nothing special. Because a devotee has all potencies. So now it's just a matter of Krishna manifesting them through the devotee. Or the devotee manifests these to perform wonderful service for Krishna. But he is not trying to use them on others. He's not trying to bewilder others within a special position. So therefore, for them it's nothing unusual. There was a story, I remember it was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And he was in the morning, very early morning, he had gone out, he was brushing his teeth. And he happened to be kind of like, there was a little wall, and he was like perched on the edge of that wall on the top. He's brushing his teeth with his stick. And then suddenly another devotee came running up to him and said, "Hey, Thakur, you have to come and see in the town. There's one yogi, and he has a stick. You know, and a branch from a tree, and he's flying around in the, you know, the village, you know, courtyard, I mean, the plaza, like that. And you have to come see this, it's so amazing." And Vishwanath said, "Why do I have to go see some flying around on a stick?" I said, no, but you've never seen anyone flying on a stick before. This and that. Went on and on, he kept pushing and trying to encourage him to come. And after a while, he got tired of it, so he took his meat twig, took it out of his mouth, put it between his legs, and then flew around on it for a little while, then came back, sat on the wall, took the stick, went back to brushing his teeth. Then the other devotee was kind of like, "Oh, now I understand." It's like this, we see the devotees, they have all these mystic powers. Because they're dependent on Krishna, and however Krishna wants, things will happen. So they don't try to use independently their powers.
Magnanimity is there. It shows him something. There's some specialness there.
otherwise, if he's just killed, he may not appreciate the greatness of the Lord. But if he shows him in such a way that he realizes the Lord is great, then he may change his mind. Because the demons, when they're killed by Krishna, then they go to the Brahmana. If somehow or another they understood Krishna's specialness, then when they decide to take up activity again, because a living entity goes to the Brahman, like the impersonalists, they go to elevate themselves to Brahman. Then, and it's nice, they're there, it's Aham Brahmasmi, it's very pleasant having no material troubles. But after a while, that freshness of being relieved from material existence then dissipates. Then you get back to the reality that I'm sitting here in the middle of low, you know, in space, doing nothing. Right? So that comes. You know, it's just like if there's been some big calamity and you're running away from it, trying to find some place to hide. You finally get away and get some place to hide. You're happy just to sit there and not move for a while and think, oh, I'm so fortunate I escaped. But then after a while, when all the danger goes away and, you know, that newness of having freed oneself from the calamity is over, then immediately one thinks, well, now what do I do? Get up, go somewhere, look for some friends, go get something to eat, go out and go do something. So that's what happens to the jiva when he goes to the Brahman. He says, nice for some time. And then after a while, okay, now I'm not in the material world, now he wants to do something. Because the only thing he knows how to do is material activities. So then immediately they just come back to the material nature. So it's a temporary situation. For us, it's a long time. They go there, then they be there for lifetimes of Brahma. But for the living entity himself, it's only a few moments. Like a few moments. And then they get bored, and then maybe they come back. So all that work, lifetime, millions of lifetimes, to get themselves to the mind. So it's millions of lifetimes of perception here, but when they get there, it's only a few moments, and then out. Back to the material world. So it's Prabhupada says, then they come back as grass or stones. So this is the deal. Okay, 1 million lifetimes, you know, like that, being very austere and no enjoyments. Then you'll be happy for a few moments. I mean, literally moments, we're talking in minutes. And then after that, in your next birth, you get to become a rock or a blade of grass. Right? Have any takers? Like that. Show of hands. No. So, that's material existence. So, even though they talk that it's something different, special, it's no different than anything else, right? You work very, very hard, and you get a few moments of enjoyment, and that's right back to where you were. So now the demons, because they've been killed by Krishna, they go to the Brahman. They get the same, they're awarded the same thing. Now, but, so then when they want to do activity, they remember the material world. Or they can remember Krishna. They might remember Krishna, that's a favorable thing, and then go to Vaikuntha. They won't go to, yeah, they go to. So like that, that opportunity is there. So Krishna creates, you know, he's pleasant, he's nice, the way he is. Then they remember that in a purified state, but then they not, and they just come back to all the other things. Because for the demon, control is very important. It means if you can't control the situation, then one has great difficulties. Then they always disturbances in society come from over an aspect of control. So a very interesting example, very simple village level. So we have two persons that are doing bamboo work. One of them is the head of the whole party, so he's in charge. The other person is actually older than him, and his father was one of the ones that the guy in charge learned from. So in one sense, they both have their seniority, one on his age and his lineage, that his father was, you know, the big bamboo man in this area in the past, in his day. And the other one is that he at present is in charge. So then the older man, because he was going to do the work of changing some bamboos, he was going to say, okay, these two bamboos are here. So he said, I'll put in the two new bamboos, and after putting them in, then I'll take out the old bamboos. And then the guy in charge says, what you're going to do is put in the new bamboos, and then once you put them in, you're going to take out the old ones. And then the older guy says, no, what I mean is, I'm going to put in the two new bamboos, and afterwards, I'm going to take out the old ones. And the other guy says, what you're going to do is put in the new bamboos, then take out the old ones. And the other guy says, you don't understand, I'm going to put in the two new bamboos, and I'm going to take out the old ones. This went on for a few minutes. They both were saying exactly the same thing. But what was there is the one is, I'm in charge here, so you're going to do what I say. And the other one is, I'm the most knowledgeable here, so I'm saying what's going to happen. And so this whole thing of ego, even though they were saying exactly the same thing, went on for 2 minutes. It was very amusing. So being in charge is very essential for the conditioned living entity. So then going to the Brahman is actually the greatest exhilarating experience of being in charge. Is that means you're Brahman. So then whatever there is, it's all pervading, it's all this, it's all that. One considers oneself very, very special. So for that few minute, kind of experience, then it's something special to them. The other aspect is it frees them from their previous material conditioning, so when they come back into the material world, they come back with a clean slate. There's no previous karma. So you're starting fresh. So then they could actually get it together and become Krishna conscious like that. But what hasn't been gotten rid of is the desire to control and enjoy. So generally, they just, again, get absorbed and just become. So it's a mercy in that what they want, they've gotten. And it's a mercy in that it's kind of like you wipe the slate clean and they get a fresh start. That aspect. But for the devotee, it's not attractive because there's no rasa. But the conditioned living entity is pretty used to no rasa. They think no rasa is rasa. The concept that what's going on here isn't really rasa. And what is rasa is what's connected to Krishna. Then it takes some time to start to catch. Because they're so used to it. So since they won't catch that immediate, and everyone wants an immediate, result and immediate experience, then Krishna gives this to the demons. But for the devotees, it's not very impressive because you're not relating with anybody. It's just, it's the epitome of self-centeredness. Like that. At the same time as you don't have the pressure and pains of the material existence weighing upon you. So for a few moments to happen. Does that make any sense? In other words, it's a mercy to them because you can't be more merciful than that. Because bhakti is voluntary. So you can't force them. And since there's no interest in it, then the farthest you can get them is up to the Brahman. That's as close as you can get them to Bhakti, is Brahmabhuta. So you bring them to that point, and it's, they're close, but they still have to make the choice for Bhakti. So you, there isn't a more merciful thing you can do for them. But for the devotee, because he knows that that's not enough, it's not far enough, it has to go all the way to Prema. Then there's nice interaction. So then for the devotee, it's not a good condition. But for the conditioned living entity, it's, who is not interested in God consciousness, it's as far as you can take them. You know, elevate them and benefit them. Does Agyata Sukhi be bringing towards Bhakti? Yes. Agyata Sukhi technically is devotion that's done what you don't know. But it needs to accumulate. When you get enough of it, then it has enough influence that then faith in the association of devotees manifests. And when that manifests, then you take up that association, then you, in a determined way, then take up bhakti. It might be better to give Agyata Sukriti, but still Agyata Sukriti is something that they've chosen to do. They've chosen to eat the prasad, but they don't know it's prasad. Or they've chosen to, like, try to figure out what are those two big white brown eyes and that black face. Or, you know, kind of, you know, they've chosen to contemplate, well, you know, those devotees doing are, you know, out on the streets singing and dancing, you know, they look happy. Maybe they could work on their outfit or, you know, like that, but, you know, something that they've done, they've appreciated, they've heard the holy name, and, you know, didn't reject. You know, nice to, like the one journalist, she came and saw, I'm not sure what program she came to, it was at Avalon Ballroom or something, she came to one of the kirtans, and she wrote in her, she wrote an article saying is that the chanting has a very kind of like, I don't know what the word is. It's like catchy, but it's deeper than catchy. You know, she said it takes about 3 days for it to go out of your head. You know? You know, it's just it's constantly in her head for 3 days, and slowly, slowly. So she was saying that something's there, you know? I've listened to so many things, and they don't stick around for 3 days. So I said, there is that aspect. So with the demon, he hasn't done anything to render service. But let's say somebody like Putana, she did. She actually came in the guise of rendering some service to feed Krishna. So she picked him up nicely, sat up nicely, went to feed him nicely. But then the problem was is that there was an aspect of poison. So she got that mixed result. She got killed because of the demoniac mentality. At the same time as she got elevated to the platform of motherhood because of that service, that Agyata Sukriti. So the others aren't doing any Agyata Sukriti. It's not the... Srinivarta isn't doing some, like, service to Krishna by picking him up and taking him away. Servant, but he doesn't have the right mentality. Huh? See, Putana, in her last life, was Bali Maharaj's daughter. And when she saw Vamanadeva, you know, he was so small and effulgent and everything, very attractive. She became, she manifested kind of like motherly attraction towards him. And she wanted to, you know, interact with him in that way, in a motherly way. And so that mood continued up to the time when Vamanadeva took away everything from Bali Maharaj, tricked him, and then tied him up with ropes in the room. Then she became very angry and she wanted to poison him. She wanted to kill him. So those two things then came together as proof. Is that motherly, that she actually had that motherly affection, but then it's transformed. So then it came out like that. So it's that's why you see of all the demons, Kuka is kind of in a unique position. All the other demons, they just wanted to harm you. There was no even concept of service. That would be the If we're devotees who are dependent upon Krishna, then that's the natural way that we would see it. If we're not devotees, then basically Krishna turns those arrangements over to the modes of nature. So then Maya takes care of it. So for the materialist, then Maya is dealing with everything. But it's not necessarily for the betterment, it's just according to what is desired and what is deserved. But for Krishna, then, when the devotee surrenders to Krishna, then Krishna will see that what is being, the desires of the devotee that are being fulfilled are fulfilled in such a way that it brings them closer to Krishna. It removes any material aspect and it awakens the actual, what is the actual spirit. Yes, that's the best, is to surrender oneself completely to the devotion. That's yes. If we surrender and the result is bad, that means we've done bad work in the past. See, it's just like this. If we have if we have done something wrong, and then we understand we shouldn't do wrong. So we correct it. So that means when we correct it, there's no more, from that moment on, we're not going to get any bad reaction. But from previously, what we've done up to now, that reaction is still to come. So when we surrender to God, it's with the idea that I am fallen, so therefore I do deserve the reaction of my previous activities, but I will do no more, so they won't be any more in the future. And why do you like that? It's not because just because I don't want bad reaction. It's because the bad reaction is there because it's displeasing to Krishna. Right? It's only going to be bad if Krishna doesn't like it. Yes, it's for the betterment of ourselves. Even if it looks negative, if our surrender appears negative, the negativity is not from our surrender to Krishna. The negativity is from all the nonsense that we've done before we surrender to Krishna. We see it as positive, because there is no such thing really as what's positive or negative. Right? It can be taken either way. Just like, let us say, what is crime? Is it positive or negative? Positive. What happens if somebody broke their leg and they're crying? That's negative. But it's still the same crime. So it depends upon the situation and how you interpret it. So that's the point, is that anything good or bad is how we ourselves perceive it that makes it good, or how we perceive it that makes it bad. So if we use the standard of comparing things to what's pleasing to Krishna, then look at our situation. Then it comes out, then we can, everything can be good. Do we think that Lord Krishna is the only one? For what? In this world to surrender to. Generally from what the great sages and acharyas have understood by their, you know, meditation and efforts, that definitely he's the best one, because everybody else in the universe that you might surrender to is surrendered to him. You want to surrender to Shiva, he's surrendered to Krishna. You want to surrender to Durga, Ganesh, or Saraswati, or Lakshmi, they're all surrendered to Krishna. So then, why we should try something else? We're not more intelligent than them. So, anyone in the material world we surrender to is surrendered to Krishna, then why not follow that example? How can you feel you're getting embraced in that? Then you associate with devotees and chant and read, then you understand. Like, when you eat, how do you understand that you're getting satisfied? You have to do it.
Oh, okay. So you're heading out now?